Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. Welcome to the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Joining us this week is Natasha Pernicka, the executive director of both the Alliance for Hunger-Free New York, formerly the New York Community Food Assistance Network, and the food pantries for the Capital District. You can find out more at https://hungeractionnys.org. And we are in a food insecurity climate right now, not only in New York, but across the country. And Natasha, you are the person to talk to about this. Welcome to the Capital Connection.
Thanks so much for having me today, David.
You have done so much for the Capital Region, and obviously the Alliance for a Hunger-Free New York is a statewide coalition that's member-driven, and you're the front line for emergency food providers. So before we get into any specific issue, I know one of the major things we're hearing right now that hunger is up incredibly, not only in New York, but around the country.
Yeah, it's not business as usual in the food pantry system. And quite frankly, it's getting more and more serious as we go on. What we're seeing across the country is that 80% of American households are living paycheck to paycheck. That means they're just one emergency away from not having any resources. We can also look at it from the ALICE report. United Way has an ALICE report called Asset Limited Income Constrained Employees. It basically documents what percent of households are living in poverty, but then what percent of households are people working, but their jobs are not paying enough to get their basic needs met. Across the country, there's about 42% of households that are considered ALICE or below. Here in New York State, we're even higher at 46% of households don't have enough resources to make ends meet. If you look at it from food insecurity, that means not everybody has enough resources for or access to healthy food for an active and productive life. We've seen from the USDA most recent statistics from 2023, we had 13.5% of households across the U.S. were food insecure, up from 12.8%, which is significantly, it's significant from a statistical point of view. What that translates here in New York is that 1 in 8 households don't always have enough food to put on the table every day.
And the point is, I think, the basis of all this, the philosophy that I think, I don't know how anybody could disagree with it, quite frankly, is that people have a basic right to food.
There's a blog that I read, and it's called Who Deserves to Eat? I mean, that's what it comes down to. Who deserves to eat? And so it's just inherent that all people need to have access to healthy food in order to thrive and have a productive life. In fact, you know, I think about at this point in our society, what is the role of government in the fight against hunger? What is the role of charity in the fight against hunger? Because at this point, when you have 1 in 8 households struggling to put food on the table, this significantly impacts their pursuit to happiness, their pursuit to have a successful life.
Yeah, and that is a ripple effect through the family system, right? Because you've told us in the past that when it comes to feeding your children, most parents are going to go hungry in order to give their kids food.
Yeah, we've done surveys and parents skip meals so that their kids can have food. We know that if adults don't have enough food to eat, that can impact their work performance or their ability to do their job. We know that not having enough food to eat is in relation to chronic health conditions, diabetes, heart disease, hypertension, high blood pressure. If we don't have enough healthy food, we aren't going to be healthy, and we're not going to be able to be a part of our community in the way that we want to.
Yeah, and to that end, you know, the recent State of the State address, that's an annual address given by the governor where she lays out her proposals before she lays out her actual budget. But there was also every year this side-by-side People's State of the State address, and I believe your issues were certainly there at that.
Sure, yeah. Actually, the Alliance for a Hunger-Free New York runs the People's State of the State. We carry on the Hunger Action Network's tradition of the People's State of the State. And one of the things we really focused on, you know, this year was a wonderful year in that the governor's budget here in the state of New York incorporated the legislative ad plus the base budget for the Hunger Prevention Nutrition Assistance Program and Nourish New York, which are the two main funding for the food pantry and food bank system that's state funding here in our state. So we were pleased that the governor and her administration listened and said, okay, things aren't getting better. We need to at least maintain the funding that went out the year prior. However, when we did an analysis, you know, we're asking for $75 million for Hunger Prevention Nutrition Assistance Program. When we did an analysis that took into consideration where philanthropy funds are at this point, the increase in food assistance service levels, which are up 70% since 2019, and then taking into consideration that food inflation is up 25% since 2019. So when we did the analysis, it would take $82 million for HPNAP just to remain flat, and we're asking for 75. Right now, the governor budget has it at $57 million. So, you know, we appreciate kind of them acknowledging that they're trying to maintain. But if anything, we need to be doing more right now, especially when we're not sure how federal initiatives are going to impact folks in the state. And one thing that we're closely watching is really SNAP. SNAP, or formerly called food stamps, is really our nation's number one program for fighting hunger. It's an incredible resource. And when we saw the COVID emergency SNAP allocations end, we saw a dramatic increase in people turning to food pantry assistance. And so we're very concerned, especially now with, you know, the Congress considers SNAP cuts as budget reconciliation advances. We're looking at, you know, potentially $230 billion being cut from farm bill programs, which include SNAP. So, you know, we don't know how this is all going to play out, but we have a lot of concerns about how much more pressure is going to be put on the charitable food system, like our neighborhood food pantries.
Yeah, you told me off air that 30% of the food comes through the USDA to the pantries?
Yeah, recently Feeding New York, which is the food bank association here in New York State, reported that 30% of the food that their member food banks distribute comes from the federal government USDA program TFAP. And so that's what we think of like the free government food. You know, the canned green beans and, you know, the government cheese. I know I had that back in the day. So 30% of the food is free. That's important. I think most people don't realize that food pantries pay for most of the food that they get from the food banks. You know, some of it is like 16 cents a pound, but other food is really like operating like a wholesale cooperative. So pantries' dollars go a lot farther when they're paying for food at the food bank. But if we see changes to the free food, that's going to take a big hit on food pantries right now, on top of potential increases in service levels.
Can I ask you just a, you know, the question that I think everyone has in their mind that cares about this issue, that believes that food is a right? Why? Why won't they fund it fully? Why are we, you know, at DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, cutting things without understanding what they will do to people on the ground? And, you know, is this personal? Do they know what they're doing? Do they not get the information? And what do you guys do to lobby? You know, are you on the phones right now talking to the federal government and arguing your position?
You know, I think the question is, what's the role of the government in the fight against hunger? And the United States does not recognize food as a basic right. In fact, chose not to recognize food as a basic right. So we are pleased that here in New York State, there is a bill where we are supporting the work to advance food as a human right here in New York State. Maine was the first state in the U.S. to recognize food as a right. So I think, you know, it's starting. I think people are starting to recognize that this really does need to be a government-protected right to food. It almost seems like it's a no-brainer. Like, of course, everybody should have food. But when you look at how policy and funding impact it, we're not supporting that in practice. I think that, you know, for thousands of years, there's this idea that we feed the poor as a concept of a lot of religious traditions, feed the poor. And so I have been down at a SNAP hearing in D.C. where the argument was that the religious group, churches, should be taking care of people, not the government. And I wholeheartedly do not agree with that statement. But some people
hasn't always been the line from the conservatives, let the charities help the poor and the needy.
Yeah, I mean, so that's kind of the argument against it. However, when you have one in eight households not able to make ends meet, that's a systemic issue that requires policy. That's not something that charity is here for. And, you know, the middle class is decreasing. We know that. That's been happening for decades. People don't have as much spending money, and when they don't have as much money, philanthropy takes a hit, and nonprofits can only do the best they can. One of the things that we're at risk of in the pantry system is we have made a lot of strides over the past decade to improve the quality and variety of food that goes out through food pantries. Just knowing that, you know, people want fresh produce. When we have surveyed food pantry clients, the top three things that food pantry guests want, number one is meat. Meat's expensive. Number two, dairy. And number three is fresh produce. And so, you know, years ago, it was very much just canned food. Now, almost all of the pantries in our coalition provide fresh produce and a variety of items. People have been adding things for different cultural backgrounds, depending on the neighborhoods and communities they serve, by providing more dignity. Because as I said, with one in eight households struggling with food insecurity, this is a systemic issue. People should not have to be in this position. If you are working 40 hours a week, you should have enough money to afford a place to live, healthcare, and food. And that is just not the case right now.
So Natasha Pernicka, who is joining us on the Capital Connection this week, the executive director of both the Alliance for a Hunger-Free New York and the Food Pantries for the Capital District. So Natasha, what we're talking about, and many of the Democrats and the progressives have talked about this for a long time now, is a livable wage. You know, back in the 50s, when the COLA started, the cost of living adjustment, it never kept pace with inflation. So now you have a lot of people, just as you said, working 40 hours a week, in some cases more, and in many cases more than one job, unable to afford basic needs.
Yeah, this is truly at the heart of the issue, because when people say, Natasha, how are we going to end hunger? It's number one, it's living wages. People need to have the dignity of a wage that they can afford the basic needs. We're not talking about vacations and going to the movies. We're talking about housing, healthcare, childcare, transportation, and food. And unfortunately, you know, I've been in discussions with legislatures that think, well, people just need to get a job. There's all these jobs available. Okay, so you can try, you know, working a minimum wage job and see how far that goes. In fact, I would challenge our legislative to try living on a minimum wage. One of the things that we actually are doing as a challenge is we're taking the SNAP challenge in March. FRAC, which is the Food Research and Action Center in D.C., is encouraging folks to take the SNAP challenge where you eat using $6 a day, which is the average SNAP benefit, $6 a day. So if you want to join me, David, I would love for you to join me in taking the SNAP challenge. We are going to be reaching out to the governor's office and some of our senators and assembly members to see if they'll join me as well.
Well, we're going to have to pool our resources, I imagine. I may have to share some with you. I may have to go a little hungry so you can eat, Natasha.
Well, I think that's what people are going to find.
Right.
I mean, buy healthy food on $6 a day. I mean, that's extremely limited. And that's one of the things that is at risk right now from a federal perspective. In this past administration, we saw an increase to the calculation for the SNAP benefit. The USDA has different categories of food budget plans. And so right now, SNAP benefits are based on what's called the thrifty food plan. So if you had a budget for your groceries, you would be thrifty if you followed this plan. And they made an adjustment to the plan based on inflation, which helped. But that's one of the things that has been talked about is rolling back the increase, which is completely unacceptable given inflation at this point.
And when you look at the overall, let's just take the federal budget. This part of the federal budget is crumbs compared to something like defense spending.
Yeah, in 2023, the budget for SNAP was $112.8 billion. So $112.8 billion sounds like a lot, but the federal budget is $1.8 trillion. So it really is a small amount of funding. And the benefit of SNAP is that not only are people able to use the funding to buy whatever they want so they can buy foods they're used to eating, it has also been shown to help stabilize the economy because it stimulates purchasing at grocery stores and helps contribute to jobs and local economies. So SNAP, you know, yes, it helps people get food, but it's also an economic driver.
Yeah, it's also productivity, right? If you get food to eat and you fill your stomach, you don't get distracted. You're not stressed out. All these things have ripple effects, including that stress causing health problems. So if you're being fed, if you have quality food in your life, there's a less likelihood of a lot of things happening.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we're looking forward and where do we go from here? We have, you know, and I talked about, you know, what's the role of government? What's the role of charity in the fight against hunger? I think we need to continue to push our public representatives to acknowledge that we really are in a crisis as far as affordability, and food is a major, major issue. And so we have to continue pushing on both state and federal and letting them know what is the problem, giving them the answer. I mean, the answer is easy. You increase wages, you increase SNAP assistance. People won't have to rely on food pantries as much. If wages remain low and SNAP is impacted, it's going to push more of the burden onto food pantries. It's not making it go away, right? So it's either going to be taken care of through SNAP and living wages or through food pantries, or really both, because SNAP doesn't go far. So a lot of people end up turning to food pantries to help make up the rest of the food. I think that, you know, what's the role of charity? I think at a time when there's a lot of uncertainty, people want to help, and helping at a local level at your neighborhood food pantries you know, making sure that they have food to keep their shelves full is one way that you can do that. We really have to work together. You know, our tagline is working together, we can do more than any one of us alone. And it's the truth. By working together, we learn from each other. What works? How do we do this better? You know, where did you get the best price on this? We're seeing a lot of pantries doing their own wholesaling and collective purchasing, which is really making a lot of financial sense for them. So, yeah, this is where we're at.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things I think you found, and I should, in full disclosure, say you've partnered with WAMC during our public radio fund drives, and the partnership allows us to put the information out to our listeners who are going to donate to public broadcasting, but also by doing that, giving a donation that goes to the food pantries of the Capital Region and helping feed people. So the idea that information is powerful, if we can get this information out to people, there are a lot of people who would turn around and share some of their hard-earned money to help feed people.
Yeah, and so we got to keep doing it from, you know, our local community level and then continue pushing on our state and federal government. We did a survey with Siena College, and it was some years ago, but I doubt that it has changed much. At the time, it was a statewide public opinion poll, and when we asked, should anyone in New York State go hungry? 96% of responders said no one in New York State should go hungry. And when asked, should we spend whatever it takes to make sure no one goes hungry? 94% of respondents said that we should spend whatever it takes to make sure that no one goes hungry. So regular people, by and large, believe that we should invest to make sure that no one goes hungry. I just wish that our politicians from both a federal and state level would do the right thing. And that would mean funding programs and making policies that support people having enough resources for all their basic needs.
By the way, if you are experiencing hunger, there is a National Hunger Hotline. It's 1-866-HUNGRY. That's 1-866-348-6479. There's also a Spanish helpline at 1-866-HOMBRE. That's 1-866-842-6273 that you can reach out to if you are experiencing hunger. Natasha, there are so many people, even in our listening area, that certainly are hungry at this moment. And we keep talking about, you know, who's poor. But the definition has changed in many ways. It's not just poor people, right? It's people who are all along the economic spectrum, but just don't have enough and sacrifice food.
Oh, sure. I mean, if you think about it, 60% of the American households are living paycheck to paycheck, and 42% of American households are either living in poverty. It's 13% of households are in poverty, but 29%, almost 30% of households are working, but they don't have enough money to keep up. And these past couple of years in our food pantries, we are seeing more and more people that are working. In fact, I was giving a presentation for a company recently, and at the end of the program, I was talking about, you know, hunger and food pantries and how you can help. The administrative assistant came up to me and said, "Thank you so much for what you do." She said, "My family and I have had to turn to a food pantry because our money isn't going as far, and we wouldn't be able to make it without the food pantry." And we are seeing more and more people that they're just not making it. The other thing we're seeing is older adults who are on extremely limited incomes, who are retired, that, you know, we had an older gentleman go to a pantry and he said, "You know, I only get $26 a month in SNAP benefits." And he was so incredibly embarrassed that he had to turn to a food pantry. But that's what food pantries are for. If you go and you look in your refrigerator and your pantry right now, and you don't know where your next meal is going to come from, community food pantries will help anyone in need. And in fact, at thefoodpantries.org, we have a map of thousands of food pantries and community meal programs across the state that shows their hours of operation and their locations. If at thefoodpantries.org, if someone is listening and is just thinking, I'm not sure what I'm going to eat, go to your local food pantries. They're here to help.
Yeah, we're running out of time quickly, but I think one of the things to remind people about food insecurity, if you're thinking, well, you know, you're an adult, you have to take care of responsibilities, but most people who are hurt by food insecurity, right, are children.
Yes. In fact, when you look at the food insecurity rates, children are a significant portion of who is hungry. The households that have higher rates of food insecurity are single parent households, just any household with children, and people of color and minorities are groups that have increased rates of food insecurity. So we need our children to be nourished so that they can become educated and live their life to their fullest potential. This is a time where we need to step up and do whatever we can to make sure that people have food.
Let's hope they do. Natasha Pernicka has been our guest on the Capital Connection this week. She's the executive director of both the Alliance for a Hunger-Free New York and the Food Pantries of the Capital District. Natasha, thank you for all your efforts to try to feed our citizens in New York. I can only wish you the best of luck in trying to get more money for the cause.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustino.